Today, we'll finish text 8. We did section A. Now, section A spoke about the mind and how the mind carries us from one place to another. Therefore, one has to learn to place his mind at the lotus feet of Krishna, and that will carry one to Krishna at the time of death. Practically speaking, one should always live in Vrindavan, and that takes a training of the mind. Because one can be physically living in Vrindavan and get some benefit, but be mentally, practically speaking, living in pig loka. One could have the consciousness of a pig. Or one could be thinking about so many material places and cities and villages in the world, thinking about how I'd like to move to Delhi or Paris or New York or something like that. And then, although there is some benefit in living in Vrindavan, but one doesn't get the full benefit. So the placement of one's body and mind in Vrindavan Dham is ideal. Of course, for preaching, the devotees leave and travel to other parts of the world, leave the holy dhams. But actually speaking, other than for the purpose of preaching, Vrindavan should remain the home that we never leave. But for preaching, following the example of Prabhupada and the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and our Guru Parampara, we leave Vrindavan and preach all over the world, and that is glorious, bringing Vrindavan all over the world. But outside of that, one should not leave Vrindavan, actually speaking, or Mayapur. Because to live in a dham is very special, and one should live with his mind in the dham. But if one cannot physically live in the dham, one has to know Krishna and Krishna's pastimes and Krishna's dham well enough that he can mentally dwell in Vrindavan. And then by always continually mentally dwelling in Vrindavan, one can purify himself and go back to Godhead at the end of his life. Now, towards the end of page 74, there are quite a few verses in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, describing Raganuga Bhakti. So two of those verses are quoted, explaining how one should follow in the footsteps or accept as leader, as one's guide, one of the residents of Vrindavan. And externally always follow the rules and regulations, as Rupa Goswami did, following his footsteps, Sadaka Rupena, and in Siddha Rupena, in one's spiritual body, when one is that advanced, or materially conceived spiritual body, one should render intimate service to Krishna in one of the different rasas. So this is Raganuga Bhakti. Now, the purport continues. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has commented as follows upon this verse. One who has not yet developed interest in Krishna consciousness should give up all material motives and train his mind by following the progressive regulative principles, namely, chanting and remembering Krishna and his form, name, qualities, pastimes, and so forth. This is the essence, again, of all regulative principles. Their purpose is to help us remember Krishna. In this way, after developing a taste for such things, one should try to live in Vrindavan and pass his time constantly remembering Krishna's name, fame, pastimes, qualities under the direction and protection of an expert devotee. This is the sum and substance regarding the cultivation of devotional service. One should cultivate the remembrance of Krishna under the guidance of one who is fully immersed in love of Krishna. One should always be remembering Krishna. To do this, one needs an attraction to Krishna, taste and attraction. And to have that taste and attraction, one has to be divested or devoid of material taste and attraction, because as two objects cannot exist in the same place at the same time, except on an Indian bus. But as that is a fact, similarly, two thoughts, two materialism and Krishna consciousness cannot exist simultaneously within the same mind, as the sun and the and darkness cannot similarly exist. So this is the stage of practice. In the neophyte stage, one should always engage in hearing Krishna katha. This is called Shravana Das. This is actually the very advanced stage. There's two kinds of Shravana Das. One is called Krama Shuddha and Krama Heen. Krama Shuddha means using the gradual process of hearing purely. And this is very good. One hears from the beginning of the Bhagavatam, and one hears from the beginning to the end. But kramaheen means it's improper hearing, it's faulty hearing. In this Shravanadas, the Sa, it's not Shravanadas, it's Shravanadasa. And this faulty hearing is hearing out of order. And also, not hearing specifically. There's other elements that make it kramaheen. We'll read about a little bit more about this in a few minutes, about what is. We'll read from Harinam Chintamani a little more about what is this particular development of Raganuga Bhakti that's being described, Shravanadas, Shravanadasa. The stage of hearing. By constantly hearing the transcendental holy name of Krishna and hearing of his transcendental form, qualities, and pastimes, one can attain the stage of acceptance called Varanadasa. When one attains this stage, he becomes attached to the hearing of Krishna Katha. When one is able to chant in ecstasy, he attains the stage of Smaranavasta, the stage of remembering. Recollection, absorption, meditation, constant remembrance, and trance are the five items of progressive Krishna Smarana. At first, remembrance of Krishna may be interrupted at intervals, but later, remembrance proceeds uninterrupted. When remembrance is uninterrupted, it becomes concentrated and is called meditation. When meditation expands, becomes constant, it is called anusmriti. By uninterrupted and unceasing anusmriti, one enters the stage of samadhi, or spiritual trance. After smarana dasa, or samadhi, has fully developed, the soul comes to understand his original constitutional position. At that time, he can perfectly and clearly understand his eternal relationship with Krishna, that is called Sampati Dasa, the perfection of life. So this is a very advanced stage. We'll read some things here. This is from Harinam Chintamani by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This is in bhava sadhana. Sometimes, in the nectar of devotion, for instance, this bhava bhakti is called, one who is practicing bhava bhakti is called sadhana. So in relationship to prema, the bhava bhakti is called a sadhaka. And the example of the sadhaka is Bilamanga Thakur. And Bilamanga Thakur was such an exalted devotee that he had, Krishna was coming every day to give him milk. So he is called a sadhaka in relationship to prema, even though in bhava bhakti he is uttama bhakta. So five stages of consciousness in bhavana sadhana. While cultivating the 11 gopi sentiments, what is called here is, acceptance. The term acceptance is used. That is called Varna Dasa. Acceptance, my understanding of acceptance means that one accepts the details of his rasa with Krishna. So it is not that one can actually learn to love Krishna unless one loves him in a specific way. One has to love him as a friend or as a son or enter into a conjugal relationship with him. So when one is in Bhava Bhakti and loves Krishna, and this is speaking of the gopi's love for Krishna, then one in the state of acceptance, one accepts certain specifics in his relationship with Krishna. And these specifics are the guna, sambandha, the particular relationship, bayas, age, name, rupa, your form, yuta pravesh, what group you're in, because in Braja Leela amongst the gopis there are many, many, many different groups. There's unlimited gopis and they're in different groups. And even amongst the group of Srimati Radharani, there are different groups amongst those. And Lalita and Vishakha have groups, and there's so many different group leaders. So one gets entrance into a group. Yuta Pravesh, entrance into a group. Vesh, attire, what one wears. Agya, permission. I don't know what that is. Bashashtan, your place of residence, where you live, what your service is. Seva, the service, what you look like, what you wear, what group you're in. Parakasta, your excellence, that means what you're really good at. And Palya Dasi Bhav, the mood of a kept servant of Krishna, maid servant of Krishna. So one acquires these things, that's the stage of acceptance. The devotee may be in any worldly form, but he must cultivate these 11 sentiments and perform bhajan properly. 5 stages of consciousness in Bhava Sadhana. While cultivating these 11 sentiments, 5 stages of consciousness develop. They are Shravana Dasa, the stage of hearing. Varna Dasa, the stage of acceptance. Smarana Dasa, the stage of remembering. Apana Dasa, the stage of application. And Sampati Dasa, the stage of inheritance. So this is what's being discussed over here, these 5 different stages. They're listed here. Srila Ramananda Roy says, as quoted in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela 8:20-22, one who is attracted by the ecstatic love of the gopis does not care about the regulative principles of Vedic life or popular opinion. Rather, he completely surrenders unto Krishna and renders service unto him. In this liberated stage, the devotee is attracted by one of the yumas, rasas, in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. As he continues to serve Krishna in that mood, he attains a spiritual body to serve Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. So saying, Sri Ramananda Roy instructs us to first attain the form and mood of a Braja Gopi in order to obtain service in a conjugal mood. When a sadhaka devotee, having heard about Lord Krishna's pastimes, is attracted to the conjugal mellow, he should take further instructions on rasa from a realized saintly spiritual master. This is called the stage of hearing, or Shravana Dasa. When the sadhaka devotee anxiously and eagerly accepts the conjugal mellow, Varna Dasa commences. Then, by pure remembrance of the sentiments of rasa, he desires to practice them. He then reaches the third stage, Smarana Dasa, when he is able to perfectly invoke these sentiments of rasa. He obtains Apana Dasa, or Prapti Dasa. Finally, when he can separate himself from all the temporal material designations and is steadily fixed in that original spiritual identity for which he yearns, he has reached Sampati Dasa, the inheritance of spiritual identity. We'll read just a little bit more. If, after having tested the disciple, the spiritual master determines that he is eligible to perform bhajana and serve in the Sringara Rasa, he then confidently informs the disciple about his eternal spiritual role as a manjari in Srimati Radharani's camp under the supervision of Sri Lalita Devi. The spiritual master teaches the disciple how to develop the 11 sentiments of the gopis, how to meditate on the Astakaliya Lila, and how to properly be established in both. So there's 8 paranas in a day. There are 8 periods of 3 hours in the day. And those periods are broken down into Krishna's pastimes, what Krishna does in these pastimes. So when one is very advanced, and free from the bodily concept of life, and one is knows his relationship with Krishna, is in the stage of bhava, and has fully achieved the mercy of Krishna already, then one can begin meditating on this Astakaliya Lila, which in Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami and Govinda Lilamrita has described this in a very wonderful way. So that's Astakaliya Lila. So in each of those different 3-hour parts of the day, Krishna has different activities. One meditates on those. So therefore 3 times 8. So Asta means 8. So 3 times 8 is 24 hours of the day. So that he may fully understand them, the sadhaka is shown his siddha deha, or spiritual identity, his spiritual name, form, quality, service, and so on. The spiritual master also discloses to the disciple who his parents are in the sadhaka manjari identity, which house he was born in, who her husband is, and so forth. At this point, the disciple must spurn all Vedic religious pursuits and simply be a fully surrendered maidservant of Srimati Radharani in it, the camp leader. Thereafter, the guru will reveal in detail the disciple's eternal service to Srimati Radharani in the Astakaliya Lila. The sadhaka, now a female sadhaki, embraces these revelations in Varnadasa. He enters into Smaranadasa when he actually remembers them on his own. And so in this way, the sadhaka takes spiritual birth as a gopi in Braja. So this is very scientific and very very advanced. There's a little more about this here. Complete perfection remains elusive unless one enthusiastically performs sufficient sadhana to elevate himself from the stage of Smaranadasa to Apanadasa. The confidential process of Apanadasa is ineffable and devoid of any ostentations like Gyan Kong or Yoga. Externally, the devotee engages himself fully in chanting the holy name and leads a simple renounced life. Internally, he keeps the splendorous flames of rasa burning with pure intensity all the time. Those sadhakas who are prone to a pompous external display of devotion, or who fail to steadily and properly direct their internal spiritual aspirations, are unable to elevate themselves from the platform of Smarana to Apanadasa. Thus the sadhaka may linger unaccomplished through many, many lifetimes of devotional practice. This path of this, it explains in heart in Jagadama, Bhakti Vinod Thakur explains, going from one stage to another, Smaranadasa to Apanadasa, may take many yugas if one is not so adept. It may go quickly if one is expert. The path of worship or bhajana is the simplest, but if the purity of the bhajan is anyway disfigured by a tinge of the contaminated desire for recognition, distinction, or reverence, then the sadhaka is thrown off the path of braja sadhana, or bhajan in the mood of braja. One must approach the spiritual master with simple humility and learn this pure process properly. There's more on this, but we'll read it now. Chaitanya Charitamrita advises that those who are neophytes to give up all kinds of motivated desires and simply engage in the regulative devotional service of the Lord according to the directions of Scripture. In this way, a neophyte can gradually develop attachment to Krishna's name, form, qualities, and so forth. When one has developed such attachment, he can spontaneously serve the lotus feet of Krishna even without following the regulative principles. This problem. This stage is called raga bhakti, or devotional service and spontaneous love. At that stage, the devotee can follow in the footsteps of the eternal associates of Krishna and Vrindavan. This is called raganuga bhakti. Raganuga bhakti, or spontaneous devotional service, can be executed in the shantaras when one aspires to be like Krishna's cow. But even the shantaras in Braja has sakha in it, because these three rasas of friendship, sakaras, and vatsalya, or maternal-paternal relationship with Krishna, and shringara, or conjugal. They're all called madhurya. And that's the only relationships that really exist in Vrindavan. And even these shantarasas have higher rasas mixed in Vraja. This is called Raganuga Bhakti. Raganuga Bhakti, or spontaneous devotional service, can be executed in the shantaras when one aspires to be like Krishna's cows, or the stick or flute in the hand of Krishna, or the flowers around Krishna's neck. In the dasyarasa, one follows in the footsteps of servants, like Chitraka, Patraka, Raktaka. In the friendly sakiras, one could become a friend, like Baladev, Sridham, and Sudham. In Baladev's rasa with Krishna is mixed, because he has paternal feelings to Krishna, because he acts as Krishna's elder brother, and is also acts as friend. Sridham or Sudham, or Subal. In the Vatsalya Ras, characterized by parental affection, one can become like Nanda Maharaj or Yashoda. In the Madhurya Ras, characterized by conjugal love, one can become like Srimati Radharani or her lady friends such as Lalita and her serving maids, Manjaris like Rupa and Rati. That's Rupa Radhanath. This is the essence of all instructions in the matter of devotional service. So Prabhupada here, following Rupa Goswami, is telling that this is actually the goal of devotional service, to develop one's loving relationship with Krishna in these verses. Any questions? That's not too detailed.
I'm just amazed from the most basic construction of controlling the blind senses. Suddenly we're catapulted to
the
highest possible.
Well, we went through a lot, actually.
Yeah.
It was.
Yes? Yeah. If I were to ask a question,
yeah.
We expected that in this lifetime we could attain such a stage of revelation.
See, who we are. There's two sides to it. On one hand, we should be extremely eager and chant Hare Krishna, begging Krishna to be merciful to us, and Srimati Radharani and Krishna, Hare and Krishna, to be merciful to us, and the devotees, the pure devotees, to be merciful to us. We should be extremely eager, because the price is greed. On the other hand, so yes, we should expect it in this life. Expect the something that's so wonderful like this. On the other hand, we should simultaneously think that we are so fallen that this will take us many, 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 many births, 5, 10, 50, 100, 200, and we should be very patient like that. But nonetheless, we should know that this is the goal.
So in other words, they resign themselves. You see, all the next birth, I'll take my birth in Gurukul. Or, I've got my chart done, and they said, I'll take birth by the bank of Yamuna and the Brahma's family. Or, you know, something like that, where it's kind of understood that you're not going to go back to God in this lifetime. You know, from all intents and purposes, because we're so fallen. And
see, you don't mention that kind of talk is one thing. But the point is the greed.
Within ISKCON, within...
The point is the greed.
It's the greed.
It all depends on the greed coupled with Krishna's mercy. If we're greedy, and then Krishna, if he desires, will bless us. But if we're thinking in casual terms, I'll take my next birth in the Gurukul, or I'll be a Brahmin. If there's no greed there, then it may take hundreds and thousands of births. But if we're thinking, I'm so fallen, somehow or another I really want to become a dear devotee of Krishna, of Srimati Radharani, Lalita Vishakha, Rupa Manjari, like that. If we're thinking like this, then if we become very eager through hearing, a lot of hearing and good association, then we can still say, I'm not pure enough to make it in this life. It will take me so many lives. But it's a completely different consciousness than the other one. Because if there's greed in there, there must be greed. You can get nothing without greed. Because everything is based on a desire. Of course, Krishna will then give his mercy, but when our desire is pure and it's unalloyed and it's intense, then why won't Krishna give us his mercy? And Krishna's mercy will come through Krishna's devotees. Some kind Vaishnava will be merciful. Arjuna.
Two questions. First one is, this verse is talking about understanding our constitutional position and our relationship with Krishna. And it's been a while since I've read it, but I know in the Next Devotion, Srila Prabhupada criticizes the so-called Siddha Pranali. I'd love if you could explain that and how that process that Krishna will
make. No, it's the process. Siddha Pranali is all it means is the process of perfection. Pranali means process, and Siddha means perfection. But to do it prematurely is very dangerous. Why? Because when one is thinking of the gopis, and if one has sanskaras for a sex life in his mind, then he's going to start thinking about his sex life. He's going to become agitated. So to prematurely meditate on very intimate pastimes of Krishna is not proper. And therefore, there's criticism for that reason. So it explains that it's to be practiced on a very advanced platform. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in Jagadharma that that to take Babaji initiation, for instance, before the stage of bhava is illicit, illegal.
Sounds like the same problem as finding a Bhutamati party.
It's easier, instead of finding an Uttam Adhikari, to have an Uttam Adhikari find you by your depth of sincerity and with Krishna sending. How will you find him? How will you recognize him? An Uttama acting as a Manu, how will you recognize him from our neophyte position?
So my other question is...
Was that first question, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I was just trying to understand why Srila Prabhupada created, because it's an actual like an initiation ceremony, it's a ceremony or something like that. I like I said, it's been a while since
There's a criticism of the Babaji and the style of initiation where someone who's a neophyte is given these things.
So my other question is...
But it's certainly not a criticism of Ashtakaliya Lila. For that matter, a Uttama Bhakta's meditation in Krishna Leela, or living at Radhakund. One time one person said he wanted to live at Radhakund, one devotee, and Prabhupada said, there's enough monkeys at Radhakund. Because one monk prematurely goes there, they get into trouble.
So your question is
on... Is that enough on that, or?
Yes.
If you want, we can look it up.
I'll ask my other question now. The question is just that you mentioned that you can't, paraphrasing what you're saying, you can't exactly just love God without knowing your relationship with Him.
That's right.
So, in our situation, at least speak for myself and maybe some other condition, we don't know our relationship yet with Krishna. So, what kind of meditation should, in other words, we, like for example, you were explaining in the other class that we should be chanting attentively and also with feeling. But that feeling is a little different than, I'm a cowherd boy.
Well, maybe the summit might not be.
myself.
Prabhupada described, O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage in your service, and we know the deities. But please engage me in your service according to the level of consciousness that one's requesting. On that will mean different things. For one person, it may mean, please let me be unalloyed devotee of you. Another person, it may mean, please let me become a cow. Another person, it may mean, please let me become a friend of yours. Depending upon the person's consciousness, what that means. And Prabhupada's basic instruction was to listen when we chant. But he also said to cry like a baby, to chant like a baby crying for its mother. So that means with feeling and intensity.
But can you do that if you don't know your relationship with Krishna?
You can do that to some degree, but
you know that you're a servant of him.
Right, sure. So whatever, according to the depth of one's own realization, one should chant like that.
So in our stage, we go in front of the deities and, well, I like Krishna Balaram the best. Now, for a neophyte devotee, is that just like the, you know, his modes?
For a neophyte devotee, of course, if he's a neophyte devotee, by definition, what else is it going to be?
Yeah. Or even a mundane level, over, it's not any indication whatsoever.
Maybe it may not be, but generally, the fact is that most of the devotees of Mahaprabhu are in Madhurya Ras. That's been said. That's what Arupa Anuga is, follower of Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami is Rupa Mandari.
I have this question creating directly, but I'm thinking about it now. Is this con none different from the spiritual world, or if it's different, what is it?
What is it? Say that again?
Is con
none different from the spiritual world?
Yeah. If there is a difference, why is it?
Well, there's less cows. What do you mean? Is ISKCON the spiritual world? ISKCON is an organization. The spiritual world is a realm.
I don't know if you understand. You're really expressing it.
Well, maybe. But what do you mean? Yeah, okay, maybe you can tell me what the phrase ISKCON is no different from the spiritual world means.
See, ISKCON is an international society for Christian consciousness.
Right.
Now, is it like an embassy of the spiritual world, or maybe is it part of the spiritual world realm, or is it different? If there's a difference, why is that difference?
Well, it's certainly meant to be an instrument of the mercy of Caitanya Mahaprabhu.
Or is it like a training ground where people retrain when they start to go into the spiritual world?
Hopefully, sure. Hopefully, and that's just exactly what it is. It's to interest the population at large and train them in how to go to obtain the lotus feet of Krishna. Isn't it? It's a nice way of looking at it. That's our purpose. For ourselves, and to make the atmosphere so nice that we can do that for others. Why do we say that a temple is Vaikuntha? Like that, maybe it's a parallel question. Because everyone is engaged in serving Krishna in Vaikuntha, and when one's living in a temple, the center has to be the service to the deity. Then in fact, there's no difference. But one has to have that consciousness for him to be no different, be in Vaikuntha when he's there, or be in the spiritual world when he's in Prabhupada's ISKCON.
Because one thing Swami said that when Srila Prabhupada was here in Krishnamana Mandir, and now Krishnamana was walking around the Dhamma and chanting. So he came back to Srila Prabhupada and asked him where you went to.
He was taking a japa walk.
He Krishna Prabhupada said something. I don't know why he exactly said that.
He said, you should be chanting in the temple room. Why did I build this temple room? Something like that.
There is an education from the devotees that all the temples of the ISKCON all over the world are not different from Vrindavan.
Well, that couldn't have prophecy. But certainly it depends on one's consciousness. But not only, but understand that Vrindavan is all pervading. Mm-hmm. It's the spiritual world, it's all pervading. Krishna is all pervading. It means he's everywhere. So Vrindavan is everywhere. So when when a place is where Krishna is being served as the center in a place, that place is Vrindavan as much as Krishna is in the center. But yet this Vrindavan is special. Because Krishna performed his pastimes here. What idea did you have that this kind is the spiritual world?
Well, why I asked a particular question?
Yeah.
I was meant to come to India quite a few times prior to this, about three times. So many devotees gave me so many reasons from Shastra, especially Chaitanya Chaitanya, that it's not necessary to go. And it's more important to spread the mission and say this is not the devotee time and so forth.
And why did Prabhupada even bother put so much of his energy and time into building these temples if there's no difference at all?
I asked the same question.
And what did he say?
So then, one example from Chaitanya Charitamrita, they said when the Lord Chaitanya wanted to come and see Jagannath Puri, so that's when Krishna came up. No.
But your Guru Maharaj ordered you to come to Vrindavan.
Well, this was the last, prior to the Guru Maharaj.
So?
I just asked
him. Yeah, yeah.
But
what's your impression now you've been here for 6 months? Is this the same as Johannesburg? Is it the same as Johannesburg? Prabhupada said also that living in Vrindavan is like living on the lap of Krishna. He made so many statements about Vrindavan. To live in Vrindavan is the greatest fortune. But Krishna has to want you here. When one spiritual master orders you to go and preach, and one goes and preaches.
So then, for a person
who's Krishna conscious, because he carries Krishna in his heart, wherever he is Vrindavan. That's actually what Lord Chaitanya was told by Advaita Charja. Wherever you are is Vrindavan. And a pure devotee carries that with him. But it's not that an ordinary devotee carries that with him. Everywhere he is not Vrindavan, unfortunately. But a pure devotee, he carries Vrindavan with him because he lives in Vrindavan, because he lives with Krishna.
So as I was kind of analyzing my own particular situation in the context of the discussion, I was thinking that to a large degree, right at the bottom line is we all have spiritual master, which is the all important thing.
For now and forever. Wherever Prabhupada was, when it felt like he was in Vrindavan.
Well, I asked the question about this one.
Yes.
That's the only thing I can relate to in terms of spiritual life. Is ISKCON nothing beyond that?
No, not only ISKCON, but you can only relate to ISKCON South Africa so far. You don't know what ISKCON New York is like. You don't know what ISKCON Berkeley is like. And believe me, you think you can relate to ISKCON, but you couldn't relate to ISKCON Berkeley. You couldn't. It's this kind.
Downtown Sydney.
Yeah, downtown Sydney in the Hare Krishna Theatre. You couldn't relate to it. You've been there? Could you relate to it? The Hare Krishna theater playing the life of Sigmund Freud. It's all an act. So, I mean, see, we're still a little bit, we haven't seen the world yet, so we tend to think the world is like our backyard, but it isn't. Sometimes Maya can enter into ISKCON, but it cannot enter into the spiritual world. But the real ISKCON, Prabhupada's ISKCON, Prabhupada's heart, Maya cannot enter into it. And then when you start talking about the realist kind and the greatest kind and the limitedest kind, and it gets confusing. But I like the definition that you gave it. You know, it's a training. It's certainly to train devotees to go to the spiritual world. There's no doubt about that, and that is the purpose of this kind. And the more that the devotees are pure, the more that Krishna is the center, the more that everyone perceives that the temples are the spiritual world. Right? Yeah.
So why would Krishna take someone who's lowest class, the devotees, and put them right in his lap?
We try our best to live in.
And then leave some of his best ones back there, out in the cold.
They're not out in the cold. It's their best. They're in Vrindavan. Mayapur. The best are Krishna conscious. And why does Krishna allow someone to come to Vrindavan? Just causeless mercy. Some devotee is usually kind in Krishna. It's causeless mercy. It's certainly nothing that we deserve.
When I hear causeless mercy, it sounds sort of like one simple, no reason. Just like that.
I know why I'm in Vrindavan. It's because Prabhupada told me that when you're preaching 10 years, you can go live in Vrindavan. So by the devotees' causeless blessing, by Prabhupada's blessing, that's why I'm here. So that's causeless mercy. That's the only way. It's the way that someone gets Krishna bhakti is causeless mercy. And it comes from Krishna's devotee, who is acting as a madhyam, as if he was a madhyam. He is the carrier of kripa, Krishna's kripa shakti. And the madhyam devotee is allowed to discriminate. Although if Krishna discriminates and is partial, we'll accuse him of not being fair. But the madhyam devotee, by definition, is allowed to discriminate. So Krishna has empowered him with his kripa shakti, potency of his mercy. So if we argue that it's not fair or it's whimsical, it's causeless is the right word. Whimsical isn't the right word, but causeless is the right word, because it's just his kindness, his discriminate kindness.
Can I speak to you that maybe it's because of our desires to be from Vrindavan that we are?
No. We're not here because of our desires, we're here because of Krishna's causeless mercy and the devotee's causeless mercy. Ultimately, no one can stay here unless Srimati Radharani lets them. And when the visa is cancelled, they have to leave, even if you desire to stay. So therefore, we have to be very strict in following the principles.
Coming back to the
last person question. Yeah.
That in this greed to go back and associate with Krishna.
Not to go back and associate, but to associate with Krishna.
Associate with Krishna. Because we don't have that experience of rasa, we don't remember that experience of rasa. But sometimes you may have some kind of intense desire to go back, but it's more than, it's mostly out of, you know, with a certain motivation to just get rid of this material misery, is because this
liberation.
Will experience this.
That's the desire for liberation.
You'll experience these miseries, and you know that Krishna is there, that the Rasa is there, because you read the books and you accept it. And he said, but that is a kind of secondary thing. The first is to get rid of miseries.
Yes.
And he's also Prabhupada.
You can't go back to Krishna Loka like that.
But also Prabhupada sometimes said, yes, you should have the desire to get out of this world of miseries.
Right. In other words, you should not want to stay and enjoy the world. But the higher desire is the greed doesn't mean to get out of the world. The greed means, because Lord Chaitanya prays, Mama Janami Janami Shvare Bhavata Bhakti Ahaituki Tvayi. It means, and Bhakti is Ahaituki. It has to be, I want to simply serve Krishna out of love. That will attract it. That's the greed. The desire for liberation is selfish. The desire to unreservedly serve Krishna and love Krishna is unselfish and pure.
Because that verse, if you have material desires, like desires for liberation,
right,
you have no desires at all, if you approach Krishna, it's...
Right, you approach Krishna. But that doesn't mean you're going to go back to the spiritual world if you have material desires. It means that if you approach Krishna, Krishna will give you those material, fulfill your material desires, but at the same time he will purify your heart. And then, see, if you worship the demigods quickly, you will get results. But if you worship Krishna, it may not be quickly. You'll get your desires, but may not be quickly, because Krishna will exact some purification of the heart from you.
And I may change my original desires of getting
my Guru Maharaj.
Yeah.
But he was forced to take those anyway. To reap the fruit he had sown.
Mm-hmm.
And he was lamenting, like anything. Okay. The last question.
At the time of death. If one thing you should follow by.
Yeah. Huh? Say that again?
At the time of death, if one thing you should follow by.
Yeah.
What thing is this?
Whatever Srila Prabhupada is.
Oh, my spiritual master.
And we'll go to where his spiritual master is. Yaya Tamam Papadyante. One verse.
Yantideva
Yamyam Bhavishmanam Maham.
Yeah, Krishna says, yeah. But the idea is that when one thinks of his spiritual master, it shouldn't be separate from thinking of Krishna. That is not the desire of one's spiritual master, that he's a separate entity from Krishna. He's a servant of Krishna, or his spiritual master, who's a servant of the Krishna. So the spiritual master teaches us not to think of him separate from Krishna, but to think of him in relationship with Krishna. So when you think of him, you should think of Krishna. That's actually proper. He's not separate.
Krishna is far away.
But he has to come closer. As we can become more pure, he should come closer. Because why is he far away? He's all-pervading and unlimited. We just keep him far away. And ultimately, where will your spiritual master be? Where will he be? And say, if he's in Krishna Loka, do you think he's going to be there in a sannyasi dress?
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately. Because we have to... Because the verses are on ultimately, so we have to talk a little ultimately here if we're going to stick to the verses. See, one should, it's not actually proper consciousness to think of one's spiritual master separate from Krishna. As if he is the end in himself. as if when we offer him something, he keeps it and enjoys it. No, it's Krishna who's the enjoyer.
What about the Brahma Rishis?
Yeah, how could I give up his service? Evam dhanam na prapititam prabhai kupe kamabhi kamam maruyam prapitam prasangam kritatma satsurishi na bhagavan grihitam soham kritam nu visraje tava britya seva. How could I give up his service? But how do you want to serve him? So that is Elizabeth's stuff. How do you want to serve him? This is his menial servant. That's very nice. But what is his service? That we don't know. But also Mahaprabhu also praises Mama Janamani Janamani Shrey. You know, whatever he wants, I'll do. That's the point. If it's staying in this world. But once I said that to Prabhupada, we just want to, Prabhupada said something about going back to Godhead. And I said, we want to stay here and serve you, Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, don't make me stay here to accept your service.
We say stay here in this world. Isn't it that this world is the spiritual world, but we're not seeing it correctly? Isn't that the definition?
The spiritual world is all pervading. It's everywhere.
So why should one want to stay in illusion?
I want to stay in illusion, I don't know. But one could... That's one way of looking at it. But just like when we say someone has lotus feet, it means they appear to be in this world, as the lotus flower appears to be on the water. But though he's on... He seems to be on the water, he's not on the water. So simply when someone has true lotus feet, he appears to be in this world, but actually has nothing to do with this world. Doesn't have anything to do with the world of illusion.
Earlier the show with the metaphor, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was giving class and seminars on Brahma Samhita, and he was speaking about related subject matter, and he was pointing out that devotees like Hainamananda and distributing a lot of books year in, year out, and they're seemingly going beyond the call of duty. So within the realm of sadhana bhakti, they're attaining a high level of service attitude, service towards Krishna. So, and he was pointing that this cannot be simply done on a duty platform, and it rises above that, where we can't say they know the rasa with Krishna, but it's a very deep, profound relationship that they've developed. Otherwise, they couldn't be doing that. So he said, within ISKCON, we have the facility, if we within the service, to attain that level.
Does what means that you're serving Krishna through the service? Because it's always the consciousness that one does something and that's important. Devotional service and Krishna consciousness. It's the consciousness that one does. It's important. But we shouldn't criticize doing things dutifully either. Because duty is the platform on which Krishna consciousness is based. Because it's non-fruitive work. Do it because I'm supposed to do it. This is the platform, and the basic platform that the Bhagavad Gita is spoken on, Nishkam Kama.
But all those devotees are taking that as their duty, very strongly.
But duty, see, but it's duty, and it's non-fruitive if you do it as duty. But then you can do it for the pleasure of one's Guru Maharaj, for the pleasure of Prabhupada, for the pleasure of Krishna. Or one could do it to be soliciting new friends for Krishna. You know, there's all kinds of levels that one could be doing the service on, depending upon one's consciousness.
I have a question about following the instructions of the spiritual master. This came to mind today. I was reading one of these monk poems by Sasur Branch, and he was talking about going. He's talking to one god brother about his desire to go, and that he also liked to do that. But then he read this one letter that Prabhupada wrote about retreats, how you didn't, how this is, you know, who is, you authorized, you know, disapproving of the so-called retreat going away for weekend study or whatever. And then subsequently brings up the point that it might have been the way that this retreat was presented to Srila Prabhupada. It was like if the secretary was reading the letter, he might have put it in such a way as, you know, he might have disapproved of it, so put it in such a way that Prabhupada would also have disapproved of it. So then he gave a different interpretation of how he felt that these things, you know, such things as that Prabhupada would please with if he bore you the right way. So my question is, and now also we say that Srila Prabhupada, since Srila Prabhupada is not the planet, then his disciples have to, you know, use their own intelligence and inspiration to follow Prabhupada's instructions, and they have different opinions, and also in their own life they do, you know, have their own individual natures and the way they follow them. So
just don't ask me, how do we know?
No, not exactly how do we know, but just what, yeah, how much, you know, sort of freedom we have within.